Hello, and welcome to the Reading Circle with Sandra
and Andrew
Milne-Skinner. Today we're going to introduce a book that was first published in 1995, but which seems even more relevant today. It is The Tortilla Curtain by T.C. Boyle. Born in New York in December 1946, he is the New York Times best-selling author of 19 novels and 11 collections of stories. He was previously a distinguished professor of English at the University of Southern California. He's received many awards and honours for his work. Much of this, according to Wikipedia, explores the baby boom generation, its appetites, joys and addictions. His fiction also explores the ruthlessness and the unpredictability of nature and the toll human society unwittingly takes on the environment.
T.C. Boyle opens the novel with a quotation from John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath. "They ain't human. A human being wouldn't live like they do. A human being couldn't stand it to be so dirty and miserable."
The publisher's introduction to the book reads, "When Delaney Mosbacher knocks down a Mexican pedestrian, he neither reports the accident nor takes his victim to hospital. Instead, the man accepts $20 and limps back to poverty and his pregnant 17-year-old wife, leaving Delaney to return to his privileged life in California. But these two men are fated against each other as Delaney attempts to clear the land of the illegal immigrants who he thinks are turning his state park into a ghetto, and a boiling point of racism and prejudice threatens to spill over."
The first part of the book is entitled Arroyo Blanco, which is the name of the smart and exclusive new housing estate where Delaney Mosbacher and his family live. So smart, indeed, that some of the occupants want to turn it into a gated community. And the book itself begins with the accident.
Afterwards, he tried to reduce it to abstract terms. An accident in a world of accidents. The collision of opposing forces, the bumper of his car, and the frail, scrambling, hunched-over form of the dark little man with a wild look in his eye. But he wasn't very successful. This wasn't a statistic in an actuarial table tucked away in a drawer somewhere. This wasn't random and impersonal. It had happened to him. Delaney Mosbacher of 32 Pignon Drive, Arroyo Blanco Estates, a liberal humanist with an unblemished driving record and a freshly waxed Japanese car with personalised plates. And it shook him to the core. Everywhere he turned, he saw those red-flecked eyes, the rictus of the mouth, the rotten teeth, and the incongruous shock of grey in the heavy black brush of the moustache. They infested his dreams, cut through his waking hours like a window on another reality. He saw his victim in a book of stamps at the post office, reflected in the blameless glass panels of the gently closing twin doors at Jordan's elementary school, staring up at him from his omelette au fin herbe at Emilio's in the shank of the evening.
The first thing Delaney is worried about is his car, and then the effect of the accident on his insurance rates. Only then does he think of the victim. The victim is a Mexican, quite badly injured in the arm, leg and face. He says he doesn't want a doctor, which suggests that he is an illegal immigrant, but he asks for money, and Delaney gives him $20. At first, Delaney feels sorry for the man. Then, when he realises that he must be illegally camping in the state park, his sympathy turns to anger, because Delaney loves the countryside, loves to go hiking in the state park, and hates the thought of the park being spoiled by illegal camping. He thinks of himself as a liberal, but his hypocritical conscience is pricked by what has just happened.
He tells the man at the garage that he hit a dog. Later, he asks himself, why was he lying? Because he was covering himself, that's why. Because he'd just left the poor son of a bitch there alongside the road, abandoned him, and because he'd been glad of it, relieved to buy him off with his $20 blood money. And how did he square that with his liberal humanist ideas? Now we see things from the Mexican, Candido's, perspective and from the perspective of his 17-year-old pregnant wife, named, curiously, America.
And a reading. America found him at the bottom of the path, bundled in the twilight like a heap of rags. She'd walked nearly 8 miles already, down out of the canyon to the highway along the ocean, where she could catch the bus to Venice for a sewing job that never materialised, and then back again, and she was like death on 2 feet. $2.20 down the drain, and nothing to show for it. By lunchtime, she could taste the panic in the back of her throat. For the first time in 4 months, for the first time since they'd left the South and her village and everything she knew in the world, she was separated from Candido. She walked in circles and everything looked strange, even when she'd seen it twice, 3 times over. She didn't speak the language. Black people sauntered up the street with plastic grocery bags dangling from their wrists. She stepped in dog excrement. A gabacho sat on the sidewalk with his long hair and begged for change, and the sight of him struck her with unholy terror. If he had to beg in his own country, what chance was there for her? But she held on to her 6 little silvery coins, and finally a woman with the Chilango accent of Mexico City helped to find her bus. She had to walk back up the canyon in the bleak light of the declining day, while the cars swished by her in a lethal hissing chain, and in every one a pair of eyes that screamed, get out of here, and go back where you belong. And how long before one of them tore up the dirt in front of her and the police were standing there demanding her papers.
Candido is in a terrible state. He is in pain all over. His urine is bloody. He is feverish and slips in and out of delirium. They had been living in the canyon for 3 weeks looking for work, but it was hard to come by. Then America goes looking for work, as Candido can't work, and they need to eat. All they wanted was a little house, a yard, a TV, and maybe a car. Was that too much to ask?
Delaney lives with his second wife, Kira, her 6-year-old son, Jordan, 2 dogs and a cat on a private estate with tennis courts, a golf course, a community centre and 250 homes, all Spanish mission style, on plots of 1.5 acres. Kira works as an estate agent and Delaney is a writer specialising in the natural world. In the afternoons he hikes through the chaparral and the ravines of the nearby mountains. In a short paragraph, T.C. Boyle sums up the couple.
He and Kira had a lot in common, not only temperamentally, but in terms of their beliefs and ideals too. That was what had attracted them to each other in the first place. They were both perfectionists, for one thing. They abhorred clutter. They were joggers, non-smokers, social drinkers, and, if not full-blown vegetarians, people who were conscious of their intake of animal fats. Their memberships included the Sierra Club, Save the Children, the National Wildlife Federation, and the Democratic Party. They preferred the contemporary look to early American or kitsch. In religious matters, they were agnostic.
Back down in the canyon, Candido is still ill, and America goes to seek work. She's frightened, doesn't like the way the men at the labour exchange look at her, and doesn't understand English. The man she speaks to is Mexican, but there is no work. And while she's away, 2 young white men discover their camp in the canyon and destroy their few possessions and clothes. Candido manages to hide from them.
Kira works hard. She is the family breadwinner. But sometimes she questions her life, thinking, what was she doing with her life? Cutting deals, making Mike Bender, her boss, richer. seeing that Mr. and Mrs. Whoever found or sold or leased or rented their dream house, while the world was falling to shit round her, and dogs were dying, and she got to spend an hour and a half a day with her son, if she was lucky. In the supermarket, Delaney meets a neighbour and discusses the installation of the gates, which Delaney opposed.
A further reading. I mean, we all have a stake in things, and locking yourself away from the rest of society, how can you justify that? Safety, self-protection, prudence. You lock your car, don't you? Your front door? A cluck of the tongue, a shift from one hip to the other. Blue eyes, solid as stone. Delaney, believe me, I know how you feel. You heard Jack Cherrystone speak to the issue, and nobody's credentials can touch Jack's as far as being liberal is concerned. But this society isn't what it was, and it won't be until we get control of the borders. The borders. Delaney took an involuntary step backwards, all those dark, disordered faces rising up from the street corners and freeway on-ramps to mob his brain, all of them crying out their human wants through mouths full of rotten teeth. That's racist, Jack, and you know it. Not in the least. It's a question of national sovereignty. Did you know that the US accepted more immigrants last year than all the other countries of the world combined, and that half of them settled in California? And that's legal immigrants, people with skills, money, education. The ones coming in through the tortilla curtain down there, those are the ones that are killing us. They're peasants, my friend. No education, no resources, no skills. All they've got to offer is a strong back. And the irony is we need fewer and fewer strong backs every day because we've got robotics and computers and farm machinery that can do the labour of 100 men at a fraction of the cost. He dropped his hand in dismissal. It's old news. Do you realise what you're saying? Immigrants are the lifeblood of this country. We're a nation of immigrants. And neither of us would be standing here today if it wasn't. Look, Delaney, Jack went on, cool, reasonable, his voice in full song now. It's a simple equation. So much in, so much out. The illegals in San Diego County contributed $70 million in revenues, and at the same time they used up $240 million in services, welfare, emergency care, schooling and the like. You want to pay for that? And for the crime that comes with it? You want another crazy Mexican throwing himself under your wheels, hoping for an insurance payoff? Or worse, you want one of them behind the wheel, bearing down on you? No insurance, no brakes, no nothing?
Delaney and Candido cross paths again when some men hit Candido and push him onto the boot of Delaney's car in the supermarket car park. Candido lurches away. Delaney can't get Candido out of his mind. It's becoming clear that Candido is not one of life's lucky men, and he seems to pass on that bad luck to America. He's also a very traditional Mexican and thinks he should be able to provide for his wife, and gets angry when she goes to try to find work while he is not able to work. Candido was originally married to America's sister, but he spent a lot of time in America working and sending money home. He and his wife were unable to have a child. When he returned home after one of his trips abroad, she had left him for another man, taking all their money, and was now pregnant. Years later, aged 33, after a period when despair turned him to drink, he meets her much younger sister, America, and she agrees to marry him and go to America with him. But they're robbed after crossing the border and lose what is left of their money. They can't afford anywhere to live and end up camping in the canyon. Then Candido has the accident. America gets 2 days' work, but then disaster. Coming back from her second day of work and unable to find Candido, America makes her way back to their camp. There she is attacked and raped by two men who also steal her money. The first part of the book ends here.
The second part of the book is called El Thanksgiving. Delaney is having some bad luck too, albeit superficial bad luck in his case. He parks his new car by the road to go hiking, and when he returns, it's been stolen. The police had taken the report with all the enthusiasm of the Walking Dead. He might as well have been reporting a missing paperclip for all the interest they mustered.
Then Candido ends up working on the new high fence that Delaney and Kira are having built round their property after a coyote killed one of their dogs. It seems almost as if Candido is haunting them. Meanwhile, Kira encounters the two men who raped America hanging around one of the properties she is selling. She feels threatened by them.
Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Throw them some pesos and they work so hard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. I don't even ask if they got green card. They're gonna pave up my driveway this Christmas. They're gonna clean all my cars this Christmas. They're gonna shovel all the snow this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. They're gonna dig me a pool this Christmas. They're gonna landscape my lawn this Christmas. They're gonna cook me up some tacos this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. 16 arrive in a stolen car. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. When they're not working, they sit at the bar. They're gonna drink some cervezas this Christmas. They're gonna shoot some tequila this Christmas. They're gonna get DUIs this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. They're getting free organ transplants this Christmas. They're gonna have anchor babies this Christmas. They're gonna scream si se puede this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. One at a time, run past those border guards. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Hugo Chavez sends his kind regards. They're gonna tackle Pat Buchanan this Christmas. They're gonna chase down Lou Dobbs this Christmas. They're gonna join up with La Raza this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. They're gonna spread bubonic plague this Christmas. They're gonna bring me lots of bedbugs this Christmas. They're gonna pass tuberculosis this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard.
And that sharply ironic song was Illegals in My Yard by Fernando Mora. Back in the canyon, America does not tell Candido that the men raped her. Still, he is overcome by a sense of hopelessness. A further reading. He was drunk. Drunk for a purpose, for a reason. Drunk because he was fed up with the whole Yankee gringo dog-eat-dog world, where a poor man had to fight like a conquering hero just to keep from starving to death. Drunk because after 3 weeks of on-again, off-again work and the promise of something better, Al Lopez had let him go. Rigoberto's brother, the one who'd been ill, was back from his sickbed and ready to work. A hernia, that's what he had, and he'd gone to the gringo doctors to sew it up, and that was all right, because he had papers, la tarjeta verde, and he was legal. Candido was not. "Haven't I done good work?" he asked Al Lopez. Haven't I run after everything you told me to do like a human burro? Haven't I busted my balls? Yeah, sure, Al Lopez had said, but that's not the problem. You don't have papers, and Ignacio does. I could get in trouble, big trouble. And so Candido had bought the sausages and the wine and come home drunk with the dress and the shorts in a paper bag, and he was drunk now and getting drunker.
One morning, Candido finds that the places where the men congregate to get work have been shut down, and that the police will be doing a sweep looking for illegal immigrants in the area. What will he do now? And the final reading. Candido felt his jaws clench. What were they going to do now? If there was no work here anymore and La Migra to make sure of it, he and America would have to leave. Either that or starve to death. That meant they'd have to go into the city, down to Santa Monica or Venice, or up over the canyon and into the valley. That meant living on the streets, exposing America to the obscenity of the handout, the filth, the dumpsters out back of the supermarkets. And they were so close. Another couple of weeks of steady work and they could have had their apartment, could have established themselves, could have looked for work like human beings, riding the bus in freshly laundered clothes, seeking out the back rooms and sweatshops where nobody cared if you had documents or not. From there, in a year or two, they could have applied for their green cards. Or maybe there would be another amnesty. Who could tell? But now it was all over. Now there was no more safe haven, no more camp in the woods. Now it was the streets.
As the book continues, a feeling of doom permeates the story. Things are not going to get better. The residents of Arroyo Blanco now want to build a 7-foot wall round the entire state. Delaney is against it, against the whole philosophy of his neighbours. It was poisonous. The whole place was poisonous. The whole state. He wished he'd stayed in New York. He felt depressed and out of sorts as he made his way through the familiar streets, the vias and calles and avenidas of this, his exclusive private community in the hills, composed of entirely Spanish mission-style homes with orange tile roofs, where the children grew into bigots, the income swelled and the property values rose disproportionately. But Delaney is in the minority, and the wall is built.
Candido builds a makeshift shack in the gully for America and the baby, and steals things from Delaney's garden to help with the building. Delaney is convinced that Candido is responsible for this and other misdemeanors. He goes hunting for him, having previously been persuaded to buy a gun for his family's protection. Their paths coincide in an apocalyptic climax. Read the novel to find out how.
And what about the reviews of The Tortilla Curtain by T.C. Boyle? Quote, a remarkable feat of imaginative empathy, said the Daily Telegraph.
This novel examines America's guerrilla war between the haves and have-nots with a zing unequalled since The Bonfire of the Vanities, and that's The Observer.
And from The Times, Books of the Year, quote, if Dickens were alive today, he would be writing this sort of book.
And from the New York Times Book Review, confirms Boyle's reputation as a novelist of exuberance and invention. It also adds to his fictional range an open-hearted compassion for those whom society fears and reviles. So, what did Reading Circle members think about the book?
Well, this book was perceived differently by various Reading Circle members. Several people found it disturbing and sad, with too much tragedy, but were happy to have read it. The main issues it deals with, immigration and climate change, are very timely, and members found it hard to believe that the book was written 30 years ago.
In terms of the style, The group agreed that the way in which the two worlds were described in parallel narratives was nicely done. They also praised Boyle's choice of words. However, most members felt that the unending sequence of unexpected and unfortunate events that made Candido's life so difficult was too much for them.
The group concluded that, while the book is clearly a work of fiction, Boyle did seem to write with a lot of foresight when it comes to climate change and immigration.
Would we recommend it? I certainly would. It is a relentlessly gloomy tale, but it has so much relevance to current issues of illegal immigration all over the Western world. It's beautifully written, and some of the similes are unforgettable. For example, the Mexicans are perceived by the people on Delaney's estate as like the barbarians outside the gates of Rome. And he describes a hot, cloudless wind like a rope burn. It certainly gave me a lot to think about.
For me, a stunning novel. I really did feel knocked out by it. The similes and metaphors Boyle uses are strikingly original. I now understand why my son Andreas raves about the 77-year-old cult author T.C. Boyle.
Now we've got our book recommendations from Reading Circle members. The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society by Mary-Ann Schaffer and Annie Barrows. This is about Guernsey under World War II occupation. An easy read.
The Women by Christine Hanna, post-Vietnam War in the United States.
One Life by Barbara Winton. This is about her father, Nicholas Winton, who arranged trains for Czech Jewish children to escape from Prague in the late 1930s. It's now an acclaimed film starring Anthony Hopkins.
The Seven Husbands of Elizabeth Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid, The Life of a Hollywood Starlet.
Austria Behind the Mask, Politics of a Nation Since 1945 by Paul Lendvai. Mixing personal memories with high political drama, Lendvai reveals the knotted web of forces which have driven Austria to its current perilous state. And this was actually chosen as the next book for our reading circle.
The next curious perilous state, particularly after the recent EU elections. For the book, Vienna, How a City of Ideas Created the Modern World by Richard Crockett. The city of Freud, Wittgenstein, Mahler and Klimt was the melting pot at the heart of a vast metropolitan empire. But with the Second World War and the rise of fascism, the dazzling coterie of thinkers who called Vienna home dispersed across the world, where their ideas continued to have profound impact.
Do join us for the next Reading Circle programme at 2000 on Tuesday the 5th of August, when we will be introducing Austria Behind the Mask, Politics of a Nation Since 1945 by Paul Lendvai. Here's how Shalini Randeria, President and Rector of the Central University Vienna, reviewed this book. Erudite and incisive, this unsparing but fair analysis of Austrian post-war politics by an insider-outsider is vintage Paul Lendvai.
We'll play out now with El Immigrante by Calibre 50, one of the many songs you can find on the internet about the plight of Mexican immigrants to the United States. Thank you for your company.
Thank you for listening.
Apenas tenía 17 cuando crucé la frontera.